welcome to the 79th episode of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movies podcast where we talk all things movies. Tonight we're reviewing You Were Never Really Here, the new film from Lynn Ramsey, director of We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is a film that no one should talk about. The film stars Joaquin Phoenix as a man tortured by his past, who now tracks down missing girls for a living until one rescue goes out of control and sends him on a violent journey. My name is Cameron Salina, and I'm joined by co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
Hello.
Heyo. Good to be here.
It's good to be here. It's been an interesting week. Trevor, catch us up on the Golden Globes.
Well, I think Emma Stone apologized for being cast as half Asian.
Yep.
By Cameron Crowe.
Yep.
I'm not sure it was her fault. Yep. And in a related story, Sandra Oh won an Emmy, so that's interesting. And
did the typical films that everybody thinks about, you know, A Star Is Born, Roma, did they win Best Picture?
I don't think so. I didn't actually look at any winners lists, but I think I
wasn't it Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody won
Rhapsody
a lot of
won wow. drama
wow.
over If Beale Street Could Talk, Black Klansman, Black Panther, and A Star Is Born.
There is a category called Best Comedy or Musical.
Yes. Which A Star Is Born and Bohemian Rhapsody did not compete in. Do you want to know what won Best Comedy or Musical? Green Book.
Date Night. What?
What is the...
Over Crazy Rich Asians, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Vice.
Guys, what is the Golden Globes even doing?
I think this is the year that the Golden Globes has officially made itself irrelevant.
Well, I think it's them trying. They know they're irrelevant, and so they're like, "What if we just mess everything up before the Oscars? Like, let's just see what happens."
The Golden Globes would work better is if they weren't just giving awards and they just put like some of our favorite filmmakers of the year on stage for 5 minutes while a bunch of actors are drunk in the crowd.
Yeah,
that's TV, you know.
Exciting things though. Quaron won Best Director. Justin Hurwitz won Best Original Score for First Man. Shallow won Best Original Song. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Feature. And Roma won Best Foreign Language Film.
Okay. So, okay, here's the deal. You just, no matter how good you think Bohemian Rhapsody is, you can't have it be Best Drama and then give Quaron the Best Director.
Yeah.
Like,
Roma wasn't nominated, in all fairness, for drama. Or musical or comedy.
Well, still, that's even the problem. Like, how are you going to say... I know that those categories are kind of closely tied anyway, but what exactly is your, like, aim?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
what kind of
films really
are you trying to award?
They couldn't really give Best Director to Bohemian Rhapsody because nobody really knows who directed it, because Bryan Singer directed part of it and then was fired, and then someone else came in and directed the rest of it. So nobody really knows. Nobody talks about the director of that film. The director wasn't thanked, wasn't talked about at all at the awards. But
well,
I think that we've dedicated about 2 minutes.
Singer did the whole thing, but that's just my opinion.
I think we directed about 2 minutes too much to this. So before we get to honorable mentions tonight, I have a quick thing that I want to ask you guys. There was a... there was a list that came out from the American Society of Cinematographers. Jake, you may know about this. Of the 100 best films shot in the 21st century.
Oh.
Or in the 20th century. Do you guys happen to have any guesses as the what made the top 10? They listed all of them, 100 through 90, but they only ranked the top 10.
Did these skew towards good cinematography films? Or are they just best films?
No, they actually.
To be
this
done
is
by the.
No, these are actually like very well, well done films. I agree with.
Did you say
some of them? There's a lot of them.
20th or 21st?
20th century.
Oh, okay.
So 19 to 2000.
If I'm gonna. Are we gonna take
Citizen
like
Kane is
who
definitely
can
the top 10.
Just, who can
just,
guess
just,
fa-
just
the
give
most.
Me some guesses. Well, just yeah, just give me some guesses.
A Space Odyssey
is number 8, number 9.
Okay.
Lawrence of Arabia
is number 1.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
There you go.
Blade Runner.
Number two.
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane is number four.
Apocalypse Now.
Oh, let's see.
Is number three.
Yep. The Godfather.
Wow, Jake, do you pull this up?
No. I'm just thinking of like epic films from the 20th century.
All right. So you guys have Godfather. The top four. Godfather's five.
Yep.
Wow.
There we
go. You guys are only missing four of the top 10. Which I don't know if you guys would get. I don't like some of these. I didn't really know. Number six is Raging Bull. That's the one that I would feel like you guys would have gotten. Seven's The Conformist. Eight's Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven.
Yep.
Okay. And 10 is The French Connection.
I always forget that Terrence Malick is like old and has been doing stuff forever.
Yeah, he took an 18-year break between Days of Heaven and The New World. Maybe it was like a 20-year break, something like that.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of, you know, really good films on the list. Shawshank's on there, Saving Private Ryan, Matrix, Exorcist, Chinatown, Godfather Part 2, Cool Hand Luke, Grapes of Wrath. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. If that's your thing and you're into cinematography, go to theasc.com, go to their news section, and you can find the whole list there. I just kind of found that interesting, that little list.
You said that as if you were a football player that went to Ohio State and is now doing your little name card. The ASC.
ASC. I always, I don't know why I always... Do you guys say the or the in situations like that? Because I started noticing...
I change back and forth depending. I don't know what it depends on, but I use both.
Trevor, how do you feel about people saying the Baylor University?
Yeah, it's become a thing on the Twitter where a lot of high school recruits say proud to be offered by University of Baylor. And that's weird.
What?
But yeah.
Hmm. What? Interesting.
Oh, well.
Well, let's go ahead and get to Honorable Mentions. Honorable Mentions is a segment that we do from time to time where we nominate people for the Hall of Mentions. Oh, that came naturally. Yeah, the Hall of Mentions. What it takes to be a mensch is the biggest part is, do you pass the blind test? And by that, what I mean is, if I knew nothing else about a film other than this person that we're nominating was involved, is that enough to make me go see the movie? So, for example, if all I knew about a movie was that Steven Spielberg was directing, I don't know the plot, I don't know any actors, I don't know the cinematographer, anything about the story, I know nothing at all about it other than Steven Spielberg's directing, is that enough to make me go see it? There are plenty of people that are great actors, but maybe not good enough to make me go see a movie just because they're in it or they're directing it. It must be a unanimous vote. All three of us must agree on it. And they must have been in or worked on five films. That just kind of gets them past a point where they're able to, you know, have more on their list than just like one hit that, you know, doesn't really get us a whole career. So let's go ahead and get to our nominations. Jake, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so this is someone who I think has had an impact on culture and us as people more than anyone ever imagined until I would say the past few years. He's been getting a lot more recognition. There's been some films about him and more to come. And that is Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers.
Wait, I think everyone else that's an honorable mensch is alive.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, this is our first posthumous. Posthumous.
Are you doing this because there's a biopic starring Tom Hanks as Fred Rogers later this year?
No, I'm doing this because I watched Won't You Be My Neighbor and I cried the whole time.
It's so good.
Then I was like, man, Fred Rogers is just an honorable mensch.
Yeah, forget like this silly movie thing we do. He's like a of like all people all time honorable mensch.
Yeah,
he's like mensch like outside of movies. Like,
yeah, forget movies, TV, entertainment, whatever. Fred Rogers was just really a genius and also a just incredible person. I don't even know what context we might see something in him in or involved with besides the biopic about him or sort of biopic coming out later this year. But yes, Fred Rogers was the man.
How much of this is nostalgia versus... I don't know. That's an interesting one. We've never had anybody that's dead, and so it's hard to weigh the options of, like,
I think there's a place for someone like Fred Rogers or someone who has had, like, such an impact on history, even though they might not be in specifically the film industry or still working. I think that, like, there is a at least in my opinion, for me, there's something that I think qualifies. Like, Stan Lee, it should be an honorable mention, you know? Like, stuff like that.
Right, but I think that that's different because I think Stan Lee, like, and I don't know Mr. Rogers that well, but I think Stan Lee's career kind of spans more than, you know, a TV show. Like, how much did he do outside of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Okay.
Is he in, like, movies or stuff? Or
have you seen Won't You Be My Neighbor?
I haven't. I know, it's on my list.
Go watch it. And then come back and you'll be begging for forgiveness with your hesitation and admit Fred Rogers in immediately.
Okay. So we're going to put him on the pending list?
We can put him on pending. That's fine.
Let's put him on pending. I'm going to see this before we do our next review. And I'm going to see Won't You Be My Neighbor before our next review. And I'll get back to us on whether or not Fred Rogers is in. How about that?
All right.
Trevor, your nomination.
Okay, so this is someone who has not been in a movie since 2014. So that's interesting. But someone who I think has done some more important things, some really great things, and were he to direct, write, produce, star in a movie coming out soon, I would be incredibly excited for it, and that is the man, the myth, the legend himself, Aziz Ansari.
Mm.
Aziz.
He made, my last thing I'll say is that he made what might be the best television show of all time in Master of None.
Yeah.
You think it's the best TV show of all time?
I think an argument can be made.
I can't tell you that season 2 doesn't belong in that discussion. So, So I love Aziz Ansari. I mean, I've always loved his stand up. He's one of my favorite recurring characters on one of my favorite shows of all time in Parks and Rec. Master of None is a freaking masterpiece. I agree with you, Trevor. Like, I'm ready for something new to come out. It's been a while. I want more, but I think that that is the staple of an honorable mention. They always leave you wanting more. And so, I'm going to vote. Yeah. I'm going to vote yes on Aziz Ansari. I think he could easily be like the next Jerry Seinfeld.
Wow. This is a hard one for me because I like his work. I haven't seen Master of None. I feel like the lame person on tonight's episode. Like, I haven't seen Won't You Be My Neighbor. I haven't seen Master of None.
Any of Master of None?
I have not.
Oh my God, Cameron.
It's that thing where, like, I want to be able to dedicate time to it and sit down and not just put it on the background. And I don't know. It's... People can at me if they want, if they're upset about that. I'm fine with that. I probably deserve some shaming.
I mean, there's a ton of stuff that I haven't seen, but, like, Master of None is really freaking good. Like, it's True Detective Season 1 level good. Are you about to say that I haven't seen True Detective Season 1?
No, I've seen True Detective Season 1.
No, it's not intense at all. I just mean, like, it's just so well written.
No, I know,
you
it's like
can't
a romantic
even understand
comedy.
It. Yeah.
You saying I'm stupid? I can't understand it because I'm stupid?
Uh-oh.
Oh, man. You know, he was in one of my favorite movies back in 2006 called School for Scoundrels with Billy Bob Thornton and John Heder.
He's also in the criminally underrated Funny People.
Funny People is criminally underrated, and he plays a great role in that. I was kidding about School for Scoundrels. Don't at me on that.
I don't even know what that is.
I literally was looking at his filmography and was like, the first thing that he's in, oh yeah, I forgot about that movie. It's like a pickup movie where Billy Bob Thornton tries to teach John Heder how to pick up women, but then ends up like picking up John Heder's like girlfriend or mom or something. I can't remember.
Classic.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton is the opposite of an honorable mensch.
I don't know, man. He's a really good actor. Jake? He's a really good actor.
Yeah, this list is just...
Nominate him next week. I dare you.
I'm looking through his filmography, and I'm looking through his work, and I'm like, it's so hard.
Don't think about who he was then. Think about who he is now.
I don't like that I'm doing this, but I will vote yes.
Cool. You don't have to.
Right.
No, that's okay. Just get guilted into it. maybe me saying yes will help you guys to say yes for my nomination. Although that does compromise the integrity of the Mensches. I do think like Aziz is a talented dude. I think he deserves a lot of credit for the stand-up that he's done. His character on Parks and Rec was good. I know he didn't write that character, but he definitely had some input. I even, like, he used to be on a show called Human Giant, which was like a kind of SNL type show that was funny back in like 2007. So he's an entertaining guy. Yeah, I'd put him in there. Okay, so good. Aziz Ansari, welcome. Okay. I joked about doing this person before, and I'm just going to go ahead and do it because yes. I want to have the conversation, and I think that it's worth having because this person's about so much more than just movies. You know, he's about fast cars. He's about a lot of action. He's about muscles, but more importantly than anything, he's about family. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, we here at Popcorn Optional are family, and I think that we should keep things within the family and nominate Vin Diesel. Yes, this is going to be the episode where Vin Diesel gets in and Mr. Rogers is put on pending.
I don't really know what to say.
Let's have the discussion. Is there any part of you that would have seen a movie called The Pacifier if Vin Diesel wasn't in it?
I was like 10 when that came out. My mom just came home with the VHS and I watched. There was no decision making.
Oh, there was decision making. And no. By the way, you were 15.
No.
Yeah, 2005.
Well, I didn't go to the theater and see it, I can tell you that. I had a little sister.
All the Fast and the Furious movies. He's Groot. He was in Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. He was Groot. He was in Chronicles of Riddick. He was Groot.
Okay,
he was
so
Groot. He was in Triple
he's Dom
X.
Toretto. He's Dom Toretto.
His next five movies are Bloodshot. Don't know what that is. Fast 9, Triple X 4, Fast 10, and Furia, which is maybe a Riddick movie.
Yeah, that's a Riddick movie.
He plays four characters.
Yeah, and all of those characters are the exact same.
He also had a video game.
He's Dom Toretto and he's Groot. That's it. That's all he is.
Yeah, guys, you're making this sound like a bad thing. Have you, like, I don't get what is wrong
he was in
with
Saving
anything
Private
that
Ryan.
You just said. He was in Saving Private Ryan. He was the voice of the Iron Giant in Iron Giant.
Yeah, but, like, anybody could have recorded that and then they can pitch you down and stuff to make you sound like a robot. It's a no.
Oh, he's, so you're going to just, oh, geez.
He's not a good actor.
That's the one thing.
I'm going to drive to your house right now and Clockwork Orange you into watching all seven of the Fast and the Furious movies and the short films, Los Bandoleros, whatever the Paul Walker one is, until you realize the greatness of the D's.
I would love to see you try to do that.
What do you mean try? It's very simple. I don't get this try thing.
Oh, Cameron. Trevor, what would your vote be?
I think I would like him more if he hadn't chosen Vin Diesel as his stage name.
What do you mean chose? The name chose him. You don't choose a name like Vin Diesel. The his Diesel name is chooses
Mark Sinclair.
You.
Wait.
Yes.
His name is Mark Clay. Screw this.
His name is Dominic Toretto.
That's a hard no. His name's not even Vin Diesel. Oh my God.
Wait, guys, I have a commercial I could show you that he did for the shark toys that would make you really want to put him in there.
No, Cameron, it's a no.
I'm amending the rules of the honorable mentions. Only one vote needs to get in.
This isn't the Senate. You can't just go nuclear option when your bill doesn't pass. No. No.
I am putting it up on the website. Vin Diesel is an honorable mention.
No.
Is he even Menchie? Do you guys even, would you even put him? No. Oh my goodness.
Listen, here's the thing. The only thing that I see because he's in it is a Fast movie. That's it.
Is that a bad thing?
You don't see that because Vin Diesel is in it. You see it because you know you're going to be entertained with just like ridiculous stunts and dialogue.
That's like saying you don't go see a Mission Impossible movie because Tom Cruise is in it. Tom Cruise is definitely a draw. Vin Diesel is definitely a draw.
The franchise is bigger than the actor in that case.
Cam, did you go see The Last Witch Hunter?
If I say yes, will you put him in?
Oh, what I'm saying is there's nothing on earth that could make me want to see that movie, and definitely not Vin Diesel.
Yeah, but did you go see 30 minutes or less with Aziz Ansari or Get Him to the Greek or Ice Age Continental Drift or Epic? Did you see any of those? No.
Since The Last Witch Hunter, has Vin Diesel made one of the best TV shows of all time? No.
He's made one of the best Fast and the Furious movies of all time, as well as Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Avengers Infinity War.
He didn't make any of those. He had minor character roles. He had minor character roles.
My hot take is that his best true acting performance is as Groot.
Mm. You guys are discrediting the man, and I hope that the Diesel breaks down your wall, King Kool-Aid style, and just... leaves without even filing insurance claims.
I would love
that,
too.
The interesting thing about him being Triple X and Dom Toretto is that those movies are indistinguishable if you just watch the trailers.
Oh. There aren't even super fast cars in Triple X. He's on skis. He's on motorbikes. He has, oh my gosh. You guys are just saying ridiculous things right now that aren't even making logical sense. There's no family in Triple X. It's literally him. Do you see Letty? Do you see Brian? No. Do you see Tej? No. You guys.
Cameron, all right. The vote was taken a long time ago.
I get the vote was taken a long time ago, but I'm a fighter. Mama didn't raise no fool. Still no?
It's still a hard no.
Pending? Are we pending on Bloodshot or Avengers Endgame? He's going to be in Avengers Endgame.
No. Hard no. Hard no.
Cool. Well, that's all we have for tonight. We'll be back next week with a new review. That is the end of the episode because I am upset. No. Of the 20th class, the legendary 20... Only one person was put in, Aziz Ansari, welcome. Fred Rogers was left pending, and Jake and Trevor are idiots on the other person, so.
Yep, sure. We'll take it.
Cool. As long as you own it.
I'm not wrong.
Of the last time we had a unanimous pass was the 15th class. Brad Bird, Paul Rudd, and James Cameron. Oh, you know what? This is a revenge for me getting James Cameron in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Dang it. James Cameron wasn't worth losing the D's. Okay.
I just want to clarify, he wouldn't have got in even if James Cameron didn't get in.
That's fair.
I want your autobiography to be called Losing the D's.
How great of an autobiography would that be, though?
That's a great title.
It's just like me, back to back with Vin Diesel.
That sounds like the sequel to Get Him to the Greek. Losing the D's.
What if that was a movie? It's just me trying to get Vin Diesel to the set of Fast and the Furious 9, and then like, but something happens, and then we have to like go on this crazy adventure. You know what?
Well, that's the other thing is apparently Vin Diesel like is a huge pain in the butt to work with and is not a good person. So
his best friend passed away, okay? And then some random dude comes in and tries to take over his series. I mean, please. Has The Rock been nominated for honorable mention?
No, and he's better than Vin Diesel. So
he was brought into the series by the D's. This is getting out of hand. Let's review You Were Never Really Here, because apparently Vin Diesel was never really here.
He never was.
Hey-o.
Okay, turning on the serious side of my brain, because this movie's pretty serious, and it deserves us to be talked. It deserves to be talked about. Okay, so before we kind of get into our thoughts, did you guys know anything? Like, I hadn't even watched a trailer for this. All I knew was, like, I saw it on a couple of people's end of the year top 10 lists. I had seen, like, stills from it online, from it getting, like, awards and stuff. But, did you guys know anything about this?
Yeah, I just knew the, like, one-line blurb. The troubled war veteran finds missing girls. And then, I mean, and then besides that, it was just the hype.
Yeah, I didn't know, like, the bio. I knew it was mostly like Joaquin Phoenix being just a crazy hitman and saving girls from prostitution, and also a few people that I know, like you said, Cam, just have this film really hyped up for the end of their year stuff. And so yeah, that's why we decided to review it.
Yeah, so it's an interesting movie. Like we said earlier, Lynn Ramsey is a talented director. There are many people that, you know, when you look through her list of praises for reviews of her past film, think that she's one of the top directors working right now. I mean, she directed We Need to Talk About Kevin, which, if you've ever seen, is a very painful film, but very, very well done. It's a thriller, drama type thing based on a kid played by Ezra Miller and his mom, and I don't really want to say much more than that, but it's kind of about him just being the worst. And, you know, everybody knows Joaquin Phoenix. He's a very talented guy, but let's kind of get into this film. What did you guys think of this film? Trevor, kick us off.
This is a really interesting movie. I think I called the movie Drive, Ryan Gosling, Nicholas Winding Refn movie from 2013, a postmodern action movie. And I still kind of stand by that, but this is an even more postmodern action movie. It just is, it like feels like it's going to be something you've seen before, kind of, but it does all the things you might expect. Like Man on Fire, which is the one that really comes to mind, but it's completely different. It's a completely different experience. It's made in a different way. It's telling a different kind of story. It's shot in a different way. It's edited in a really interesting way. It's incredibly slow, but it is steady, and it's incredibly, it's pretty short, but it's really tight. It's just a really interesting film that it's not necessarily fun to watch, but I definitely respect it. It's really good. It's really good.
You said this is kind of like Drive. I said this is basically Pizzagate the movie, which is kind of weirdly accurate. No, this movie is a great film that's really hard to watch. I think that's the best way I can sum it up, is like there were a lot of moments where it's really, really slow, and then it goes like balls to the wall in like 0 seconds. There's a lot of just, I don't know, it's really interesting. And I just watched it today, and so I'm still kind of processing it. It's a movie that at the end, I was like, huh, I don't know if I liked that. But the more I've sat with it, the more I like it. Overall, I everything is incredibly well done. It's just, is this your kind of film or not? And it, for me, it is. Like, I really liked it.
Yeah, Jake, I think that you just kind of hit what I was about to say on the head of I think it's technically very well done. I think there's some beautiful things about it. Ultimately, it's just not a film for me. It's one of those things that like I watch and I'm like, yeah, that's good. It's just not my kind of movie. It's just kind of, there's just a couple things that just didn't work for me and were really distracting instead of like, I think I understand where they're going from an artistic point, and I think they did those things well. It's one of those things like where I'm conflicted, where like, I think it's a really well done movie, but it's just not for me. And it's hard to review because it's, you know, that personal flavor versus, you know, technically where it's at. And I think it does several things very well, but it's just kind of plot character wise just wasn't my kind of movie. So I'm going to probably be the odd one out. And I hope that this is somebody's first time listening to this podcast, because I'm going to sound like a real idiot nominating Vin Diesel and then saying that I don't like this movie.
I like DC films, and I just hate everything else. Snyder Cut. Release the Snyder Cut.
I mean, I can definitely see how this doesn't appeal to everyone. That's not a bad take at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is super heavy film.
I can also see why people who make movies would love this movie.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you guys think, Trevor, you kind of mentioned that it's a very short movie, and that's, I think, works in the movie's favor. But did you guys think that, like, it's a very simple, stripped-down story? Trevor, I hadn't even thought about Drive as a comparison to this, but Drive is really the one that, now that I think about it, feels the most similar. Do you guys think that the stripping down of the story works in the favor, or was there any points where you guys were left wishing this was longer or wanting more? Is it too stripped down?
I don't think so. I think if it was any longer, it would get a little self-indulgent. I think it already is a little too long, or a little longer than it could be. I definitely understand what they're doing, because this movie is about Joe, who, that's the character Joaquin Phoenix plays, and it's about like the day-to-day life he experiences in this crazy world of being a hitman but also taking care of his mother. You know, it's like the duality of that. There is going to be a lot of slow and a lot of fast, and this film does a really good job of putting you in his shoes while also telling this pretty well done like twist thriller film. And so I think it was effective. I think you probably could have chopped 5 minutes off of this, but I don't know if that really would have made that much of a difference.
I think the length is perfect. I feel like almost every week when we do this podcast, we talk about how a film should have dropped 5 minutes or 10 minutes somewhere. And this is what a film looks like when your first cut has 10 minutes that need to be dropped off of it, mm-hmm. and you actually do it.
Yeah.
And it works in this film because this film isn't about the story. It's not about the narrative. It's about Joe and just who Joe is and what his experience is. And it uses this, like you said, Jake, it's a stripped down story, but it's actually a pretty kind of interesting story that goes not quite as expected.
Mm-hmm.
I think its length works in its favor because when you run a movie for only 90 minutes, you can get away with kind of a few, like, you can more easily get away with shots where nothing happens, I think, than if you run your movie for 120 minutes and you have two or three just really introspective shots. I think it's easier to do in a shorter movie, even though it takes up a higher percentage of your movie. That makes sense.
Yeah, what's weird for me is that the slow shots, some of the slower moments, are actually like my favorite moments of the movie, and it's almost as if like some of the quicker moments, I get that like the fast moments make you respect those moments more, but I kept wanting, like, I feel like Joaquin Phoenix plays such an interesting character that I wanted to spend more time with him, and maybe like that's a good thing. Maybe I'll sit on this movie for a little bit, because I watched this movie last night, and kind of, you know, was one of those things where I haven't had a whole lot of time to think about it, but it was kind of, as it sat with me today, I just wanted more time, but not in like a, like, you left me wanting more kind of way, more in a, like, I wish that we had seen more of him, because some of the most beautiful moments of this movie are those slow moments. And so, well, okay, so let's, we're going to get into spoilers. If you haven't seen this movie, it's on Amazon Prime. You or somebody you know has Amazon Prime, borrow it from them, go watch it. It's worth your time. It's an hour and a half. So love it or hate it, it is, you know, it's not like it's like a 3-hour Lord of the Rings film. And it's worth your time. There are some technical things that they do very well in this movie. But, you know, one of the most beautiful moments of this movie is the scene where he shoots these two FBI agents and then investigates this one guy about why they were there, and then is laying on the ground with him, and the guy ends up like reaching over and holding his hand as they're like singing a song after he shot him and he knows that he's going to die. That was like one of the more beautiful moments of the entire movie for me. What did you guys think of that whole scene?
Yeah, I agree. I think they were more like the personal bodyguards of the governor character, not FBI agents. I think that's what I love about this movie is the entire film is basically from Joe's perspective. Like we're in Joe's head in more ways than one. And that's where the perspective of this film is. And so I think in that moment, throughout the film, we've gotten to know him as a character, and he's more than just a hitman. But I think it just kind of shows that like people that go through that world, that level of stuff, it's like they're people too. And so there's going to be some sense of empathy and understanding. And I think it was Joe just being like, I got you. You could have gotten me. This is like what you need in this moment. I thought it was a very beautiful character moment, and really interesting. Something that like no other film would do, like compared to something like John Wick. Like Keanu Reeves would have like thrown the gun up in the air and caught it and like shot him in the head 15 times. You know, it's
right.
Very different.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, violence and action wise, we never really see, like, we kind of see it from weird angles, Joaquin Phoenix committing violence. What did you guys think of the cinematography in those scenes where it's almost like a scrolling security camera view of these different acts?
I thought it was really cool. I thought it really, you know, it takes what you're expecting from this. Like I said in my intro, when you hear the kind of just what this movie's about, you're like, oh, it's like Man on Fire or Taken or The Equalizer or something like that. But it's not that at all. That's not the action is there because it's necessary to show you Joe's experience, but that's not what the movie is about. Yeah. It's not about this guy beating people up with a hammer. That's just what he happens to do.
Yeah.
And I think that just, It takes those the things that might draw you to other movies and makes them secondary to the characters and their experience. I think it's a really clever thing to do. I thought it was really interesting. Kind of caught me off guard at first because I was like, I didn't even realize what was happening because it just was so subtle in a lot of ways. But yeah, I that was one of my favorite aspects of this movie was the way that. The director Lynn Ramsey treats those scenes.
Yeah, the cinematography in this movie is incredible. I think it takes like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre approach and like Jaws, where what you don't see is even worse because in your mind you're picturing it instead of just being shown it. Honestly, I'm kind of surprised this movie is rated R. Like I know that it's there are some bloody scenes, like a few, like one or two bloody scenes, but. I think it was more of just
the
atmosphere it creates, I think, is like what made it R. I don't know. There's like no nudity, very little cursing.
Anytime that there is, there's more than one F word. So that's R.
Drug use.
Anytime that there is, any blood like whatsoever, like that scene where like, the clerk at the hotel gets shot and the blood's all on Joaquin's face. That true. Right there is like instant R. Okay. I'm curious if like subject matter wise with like the child sex slave type stuff, if that got it an R.
Yeah, I feel like that.
I'm trying to look at the rating right now.
It's not as gritty as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, same. It was way more of like a character study.
Yeah.
But there were times where I found it way more brutal to watch than other things. Maybe that's like the subject matter. But it like there were times.
Yeah, every,
like,
every part of it is brutal to watch, even if it's not violent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like even just him taking care of his mom like that, even though it was like a beautiful sacrificial thing that he's doing, it shows the like brutality of doing something like that, you know, like day in and day out. It's a brutal, tough thing. Even the score is brutal. Like I love the cinematography and the score in this movie. Like it's really organic and evocative, and the score, it's just
Donnie Greenwood.
Yeah, it's different. So good. It's different than any other score I've ever heard.
What did you guys like? So there, the score at many times when it enters, almost enters at a moment where it could be sound within the scene. Was there ever times where that was distracting? Where you guys like, is this score? Is this someone banging on the wall?
I loved it,
which is like a crude way to describe the sound, but
it was like Johnny Greenwood took this, and I don't know how much input, I mean, Lynn Ramsey had this as well, but it's like he took it and was like, well, I'm writing a score for this movie, but what if score doesn't have to just be music?
Mm-hmm.
What if we just make sounds that enhance what's going on in the film? And I thought it was fantastic. I did Jake's idea where I thought about when I was thinking about this film and writing my notes, I listened to the score. I've been doing that for the last few. And there were a couple songs I had to skip on this because they just don't work at all. They sound like a mash of mess noise if you're not watching the film.
Yeah.
But as I was watching the film, I was like, the score is amazing.
Yeah. It like perfectly captures the atmosphere that Lynn Ramsey is trying to create, and the subtlety in which it comes in. It makes you think it is diegetic. Maybe it even is diegetic, you know, like maybe that's what's actually happening. And then there's just like a little bit of like musicianship happening on top of the actual diegetic, but it's like all in sync. But just the nebulousness of it, I love it. And also, since we are in Joe's perspective from this movie, and it's about him, like he's kind of losing it towards the end, and the score does an incredible job of capturing that. Like Joe is losing it because he's been through so much, and that's one thing.
Well, I'll say he it's like heavily implied that he has PTSD from his experiences in war. So I think the noises are in Joe's head in addition to, you know, all everything else.
Yeah, and I love that, like, he's an incredibly flawed character. And, like, I feel like the movies like Taken and John Wick and Hitman, it's like they make something like this look so easy to do. And like, there's no emotional trauma or impact if this was your life. This takes a very realistic look at what something like this would be like.
Okay, so Jake, you bring up Taken. This movie's obviously gained a lot of comparisons to films like Taken or Leon the Professional. Where do you guys think ultimately this film succeeds where those ones fail? Like, what's the big difference if you pointed to one person, they're like, well, isn't that like Taken? And what's the one thing that you would point out and be like, no, it's way different because of this?
This just feels real. Like, when you watch Taken, the violence and the gore and the stakes don't feel high at all, because it's like Leon or Liam Neeson, like they're superhuman, you know, the way that they're acting and reacting and what they're doing on screen is absurd. It's ridiculous. It's entertaining, but like this, I think, feels so much different because it's real. Like, it feels so real. The way it's shot feels so real. And you know, it's not as like visually stimulating as those movies are, but it definitely, I think, will sit with you in a way that's a lot more impactful than those movies will.
Okay, so, you know, while we're on the subject of the realness and everything, the thing that gains the most attention from this movie is how real the character played by Joaquin Phoenix feels. What does he do in this that separates him from other actors this year that makes you guys think, like, this is one of the best performances of the year?
He just is Joe. That's what he does. Like, it's I think I don't, he's had what a bizarre career, but I really do think that Joaquin Phoenix is one of the most talented actors alive. Mm-hmm. I think that he can do anything, he can play anything. But it just never once do you feel like it's Joaquin Phoenix, or like his performance is perfect. Like every single bit of it, the way he looks, the way he moves, the way he talks, it just is Joe. It's really incredible.
Was there anything about the character that was, well, so I struggle with this thing of like, he's this guy who has these, he's not fully detached, but he's not fully attached to anything either. He like is in this like weird, like sympathetic realm of like, I want to help people, but I think he struggles with how to help people. And that's why like these missions to go save people are good for him, because he has, you know, a clear objective. Did you guys struggle at all with the fact of like the character going into this brothel or whatever it is and not helping other people? Like that was kind of something that, maybe it's just me, but it was like hard for me to get past.
I mean, he's incredibly complex. We see through his like complicated way to communicate with the guy who finds his assignments, that he's very guarded and careful about things. And I think that's, I mean, the title of this, You Were Never Really Here, like, you know, like he's in and out, he does his thing. And I think that he values his anonymity more than he values saving those outside of his assignments. And I think that's what makes him interesting.
And also, it's not like him doing that has no impact, you know. It's like he's taken out the guys on his way in. And but yeah, I mean, I agree with Trevor, is it's to do something like this consistently as your career, it's like you have to be so careful and so specific and so just focused on, this is what I'm being paid to do and this is what I'm gonna do, and I'm gonna, that, like, at that point it's like the bare minimum, you know. You're getting paid to do the bare minimum. I don't know.
Okay, so then if that's the case,
he's not a hero.
Okay, if that's the case, though, then why did he go back for this one girl, Nina? Like, what about her was it that made him be like, okay, this is the one worth breaking my anonymity?
I think it was the realization that she didn't have anyone else.
I think it was that, but also he doesn't like go for her until he's lost everything and he's not anonymous anymore. Like,
that's true.
For him to keep living, he has to go kill the governor and all of those other guys and get Nina out, or else they're just going to keep coming for him, because I mean, they've killed everybody he's affiliated with, so he's cornered in, you know. And it's just he retaliates.
What did you guys think about the burial scene with his mom?
It was beautiful.
That was incredible.
And I loved the way it that was definitely the most like artsy slash like abstract moment in the film. We get a lot of like flashbacks and stuff, but that was very much a visual metaphor of what's happening in his mind. And it was beautifully well done and it looked great. It fit with the story. And it was a great visual metaphor of where the character was.
All right. So kind of wrapping things up, towards the end of the film, you know, we get to see Joe goes to the mansion to save Nina. Nina has already kind of, I guess it's implied that Nina already killed the governor. And you know, whether or not that's inspired by Joe or whether she's given courage by Joe or, you know, shown that there's other options than this and being like, I can stand up for myself. She takes matters into her own hands. And then, you know, the movie ends on Joe and Nina sitting in a diner. And Joe has this almost like dream sequence, I guess you could call it, of him, you know, killing himself. And then everybody else just kind of going about their business and not even noticing. What did you guys take away from that dream ending before Joe and Nina kind of go off and have this beautiful day?
So I've thought about that a lot because that's a really striking scene. I mean, I did not see that coming. I think it shows that now where Joe is in his life that, and he does that when she gets up to go to the bathroom or whatever. And I think that shows that without her, he has nothing. Like, she is the meaning in his life now. And he's probably on like massive drug withdrawals at this point, probably given his last 24 hours. But that's what I feel like it symbolizes is the now importance of Nina in his life.
Yeah, I took it as that, but also like how, what I found interesting in that scene is like the diegetic sound of the overlapping conversations in the restaurant kind of like fades up. Like it kind of becomes like more prevalent. And I took it as like, you never know what someone near you has gone through kind of thing of like, you could be just sitting in a restaurant having a conversation and right across from you, someone could be like literally a second away from killing themselves because of how terrible their life is, you know? And also that like our current state of humanity is we don't even care. So that I kind of took it as both of those.
All right. Did you guys have any other final thoughts about this movie?
I hand out this award like I have some authority to do so, but I really don't, just as an amateur watching these things. But this is another one. I think there's been three or four this year that I would call a technical masterpiece. That just the way this film is made is just astounding. Every single part of it. We didn't really talk about, we sort of danced around it, but the way that it uses some kind of jump cut kind of things create just this feeling of chaos and confusion is really impressive. The score, the visuals, everything about it from a technical standpoint is just perfect.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's gonna be one of those movies that, I mean, like you said, Trevor, we've said this about a few movies this year that we're gonna look back on and like in 15 years, kids in film school are gonna be like, oh, You Were Never Really Here, favorite film of all time. And I definitely understand why some people don't like it, but I definitely think there's merit to it. Why do you guys think it's called You Were Never Really Here, by the way?
Well, yeah, I think it's kind of a twofold thing. I think the main part of it is just the way that he, and we see it at the very beginning with the job he's finishing up, but the way he meticulously has everything planned out, that there's no way to prove that he was ever anywhere. But then also, we don't completely know what's real and what isn't in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that we know for sure happened, but there are a lot of things that we don't know for sure if they actually happened the way they're shown to us. And I think that's part of it also.
Hmm. Yeah.
Jake, I think you hit it on an interesting point of like, as the end happens, everybody else just kind of goes about their lives. And I think it's also like a commentary on like, if he dies, was he ever really there? Like, what is he living for? What is he doing with his life that's making his life more than his life? So let's go ahead and get to our final thoughts and ratings. Jake, kick us off.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like me and Trevor are pretty high on this, and we've kind of been raving about it recently. This is a technically really incredibly well-made film. Very original. The twist is really interesting and got me. I kind of like halfway through the movie was like, well, that was pretty easy. Like that, they just kind of wrapped that up in the first. Oh snap. So yeah, I mean, it's, I really like it. If you like, I don't know if I want, I don't want to say like, if you like Drive, you're going to like this, because there's a lot of like, there's a lot of aesthetic stuff happening in Drive that's not happening in this movie, but it's kind of in that vein. I liked it a lot. I'm going to give it, after first watch, an A minus, because I feel like I need to sit with it longer before I can bump it up a little bit more. But yeah, A minus. Trevor.
I will give this a "you were never really" out of a "you were never really here." And I agree with you, Jake. The longer I sit with it, the longer it's been since I watched it, the more I appreciate it, the more I respect it. It's another one of it's similar to Roma, where it's just this, not like, you know, you like want to pop it in the DVD and just hang out, but it really is something important. I think it's something that's really impressive in a legitimate, worthwhile work of art.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in that rare minority in that I really liked Drive and didn't like this movie. It's a C for me. I agree with everything you guys said. Like, technically, they do a lot of things right. I think if Bradley Cooper doesn't win Best Actor, I think Joaquin Phoenix definitely deserves to be in the conversation. It's a technically well-done film. It's just one of those ones that's just not for me. So... that's all we have, though, for our review of You Were Never Really Here. Let's go ahead and get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
All right, I have a few things. One, I just watched the film Hearts Beat Loud.
Oh, yeah.
Last night. It's now streaming on Hulu. It stars Nick Offerman and Kiersey Clemons, directed by Brett Haley, who's done a few other small little indies. This thing is just a delight. It's a wonderful little sort of high school, sort of family, sort of hipster, sort of music movie. It's a pretty quick watch, about an hour and a half. It's got the great Nick Offerman. Got some nice little pop songs. It occupies whatever film space that there is in between, whatever the Venn diagram is of A Star Is Born and Once. This is where this film lives.
Wow.
It was really sweet and really great. I enjoyed it. I also watched another little indie this past weekend called Thunder Road, written, directed, and starring Jim Cummings, who is the biggest thing in indie cinema right now and might be bigger than that someday soon. This is a really interesting film about a Southern police officer who loses his mom, who he was really close with, and has to deal with that. It starts out with an incredible, like, 10-minute long one take of him giving the eulogy at her funeral.
Jimmy Cummings, man, master of the one take.
You will laugh and cry multiple times in the first 10 minutes of this movie. And I've never seen anything marry legitimate heartfelt emotion with hilarious comedy and just wildly switch between it as this film. It's on Amazon Prime for, or not, not Prime, on Amazon for rental. Highly recommend Thunder Road.
Nice. There is also a short film that won Sundance of that you can watch on Vimeo as like a trailer. It's basically the first 10 minutes. So yeah, Jimmy Cummings, huge up and coming director. Mine is going to be a Netflix original called The Innocent Man, and it's based on a true story in Ada, Oklahoma, of some men that were falsely convicted of a few murders and were literally within days of being executed on death row. And it's true story. It's really well done. And if you like the kind of like true crime mystery documentary genre, this is a really good one. I know it's a really crowded market, I guess, right now in that world, but this one's worth your time. I would recommend it.
Yeah, I also watched Hearts Beat Loud, and the soundtrack has been playing for the past couple days since watching it. I'd echo Trevor's recommend for that. And then I also watched a documentary called The Don Wall, which is about Tommy Caldwell and Kevin Jorgensen doing a first ascent of the Don Wall in El Capitan, which is one of the hardest climbs in the world. They spent 19 days like living on the side of the mountain, just climbing it until they, and they spent like 7 years before that just mapping out the path that is like the only path you can take. It has more hard pitches than any other mountain in the entire world, and it's just kind of this incredible story about like these two guys that are, you know, incredibly close, and their journey to do something that nobody's ever done before, and I think only one person has done since. So yeah, Donwall.
I also want to throw in, I wanted to leave it for Jake since he shared it with us, but there is a First Man featurette the visual effects. You just Google First Man VFX featurette. You can find it on YouTube. And if you've seen First Man, you have to watch this. Like, it's mandatory viewing if you've seen First Man.
Yeah.
The way they did some of this, like, blew my mind.
Me too.
Yeah. Really, really well done.
Yeah, incredibly well. I mean, and if you've seen the movie, you know how good it looks. But you can see how they did it, and it's incredible.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all we have for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with a new review. If you've enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes or Spotify. We are now on Spotify. You can subscribe to us or follow us there. Rate, review us, share us with your friends and family. Let them know that we're out there, and then if they watch a movie, we've most likely done a review on it if it's come out in the past 2 years. If you want to know more about us, you can go to our website at popcornoptional.com, where you can find all of our episodes, as well as a little bit about who each of us are. You can interact with us on Twitter. That's the best place to get in touch with us. My name is Cameron Slanina. You can find me on Twitter at 321CamiTime or on Letterboxd at C Slanina. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. That is my Instagram and my website. Trevor.
Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Until next time, we hope you have a great week. Watch some movies. In the words of Truman Burbank, if I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Bye.
Later.